Welcome back to the roundtable. This morning we'll discuss the other side of social media. We do so with our tech guru, Jesse Feiler, who says, we think of social media as all about communicating, but there's a ton of data available there as well, such as you can use your Facebook page and Facebook page data in grant proposals to back up your funding request. Just one example. Jesse is a developer, consultant, and author specializing in iOS, FileMaker databases, and technologies for small businesses, nonprofits, and municipal governments. His most recent books are I Work for Dummies, SAMS, Teach Yourself Core Data in 24 Hours, and its companion, Objective-C in 24 Hours. His app, Minutes Machine for iPad, is available on the App Store. It helps nonprofits, homeowner associations, and small businesses manage meetings and generate minutes in real time. His website, northcountryconsulting.com. And we mention that because all of the information that we talk about, all of the links and all of the great stuff that Jesse is going to be talking about, it is a link to all of the evidence. of what we're talking about is real and is out there, and he has nicely collected it and put it in a place, and you can go to the website and find it.
Evidence.
You know, I don't know. You know, okay. Sometimes just like your writing, it's a collection of yes. the stories and the links and so yes. forth of what's going on. You know, I don't want to, and I'm sorry I to do this to you, but real quick, before we start talking about this, because I was like 10 minutes ago reading about the new iOS, and mm-hmm. I know this is your, you know, this is your world. So what does this mean for a developer? Because you have this new iOS system coming out, assuming in the fall, right?
Yes.
Okay. So they've announced it, and it's out there. It's on the front page of the Apple webpage. So is this just like, you know, incredible crunch time for you, or?
Yes.
Okay, that's all.
And since you mentioned that, I think we probably should cut this short. So
oh, okay.
I could get back to coding.
Yeah, okay.
No,
I mean,
no.
That's your life, right? I mean, that's what it's all.
What's interesting about the new operating system, and there's a new one basically every year,
yeah,
is some of the attention that it's gotten. Apple often, like always, gets attention for this sort of announcement now. But the attention here is higher than usual, I think, for a number of reasons, some which are really not worth talking about, have to do with internal politics.
Yeah.
Actually, it is worth talking about, but not on this venue.
Sure. Understanding.
But something that has been picked up in some of the media is, to my mind, totally wrong. And that's worth, if we can, spending
sure.
a moment on.
Yeah.
What people have pointed out is that the new interface looks flat. It doesn't have the indicators of 3D dimensionality like shadows and so forth that previously existed in this and many, many other interfaces. And the mantra this year seems to be flat. It shows up in some of the new Windows interfaces. It shows up here. But flat is really not the right way of describing this interface. It doesn't have those visual cues like apparent shadows
yeah.
that suggest three-dimensionality. What this interface has is something that's, I find, very much more interesting. Instead of those visual cues to make you think three-dimensional, as you hold a device in your hand and rotate it, the objects in the interface appear to move as if they were in layers. Some of them move behind others. So it makes a very, very compelling three-dimensional effect that is not done by putting shadows on it, but it's the behavior of the interface that is three-dimensional. And that's very, very interesting. And
someone called that Windows, right? Wouldn't you call that windows? Like you would open up a window, you close it, you put it over the top.
No,
different than that.
It has been demonstrated, and you can find some videos of it. So that, for example, the icons on your homepage on the lock screen seem to float over the background, the wallpaper.
Cool.
That's what I'm talking
about. Yeah, okay. So
it's not opening and closing a window.
I gotcha.
It's that as you hold the device in your hand and you tilt it a little bit, the icons appear to move in front of the wallpaper, and you can have several layers working that way.
So that's going to make a great labyrinth game.
It's going to make fantastic games, but it also is really a compelling interface. And the reason why I think everyone has gotten it wrong is, not everyone, many people have gotten it wrong, is that the interface doesn't have these visual cues to three-dimensionality. The three-dimensionality only appears as you move the device.
Mm.
So a photo of the interface has nothing.
Doesn't really show it.
Because you're not moving the device.
And the article I was reading that said, you won't have to update your apps anymore. And I thought, well, that's cool. You know, little things like that.
Yeah, you won't have to update your apps anymore. You can turn on an option where they'll be updated automatically for you. So that's one of the things. But the developer point of view is that because it is a new interface, we think that apps that are not updated for the new interface will still work. Hmm. There's no question about that. But there will be a certain amount of pressure on developers to adopt the new interface.
And
so it looks modern. That's where the crunch comes from. And based on a number of random conversations at developers' conference, I found the developers who are most concerned about this are often game developers. Developers like me who focus on content will adopt the new interface because it's not a big deal for us. So we're sort of seeing a little bit of division between the content people and the tool people.
By the way, let me go back to something I said earlier that Jesse is nice enough to put up links about all of the subjects. That is, if I actually stick with what we're supposed to talk about. So,
yes, and by the way,
let me get back to that. Yes,
for the one last word on this topic, the best resource for information and videos about the new operating system is Apple.com, because I don't post anything about it because.
Right, you don't want anything,
I don't want to
screw up the
I can't keep track
there.
Of what I'm supposed to be able to talk about and what I'm not.
Yeah.
So Apple.com is the
And then they have a lot of stuff on there, actually. There's a lot of neat things that they show.
Yeah, and they are showing. I think the keynote is available to anyone.
Yes.
So you can see it being demonstrated.
Okay, so let us talk now about what you actually came here to talk about, and that is the data that comes out of social media and what we can do with that. And we talk so much, I guess, about what social media is a way of communicating, but there are fringe benefits with that.
Absolutely. And one of the aspects of social media that's very important, and we've talked about it a bit in the past, is that it's highly automated. If you look at the bottom of a Facebook page, there are some things at the bottom, including about the company. It may be under media relations.
Yep.
They update periodically the number of employees that they have to support, what is it, a billion users?
a lot of us, yeah.
And what's very, very interesting is the number of employees that they have, because they support this vast number of users with relatively few employees. Now, granted, we know that in the tech world, a lot of people are independent consultants, so they are not technically employees. So that keeps the headcount down in terms of employees. But still, you're talking in the thousands to support millions of users because it is so automated.
That automation then generates what type of data? And from what I was looking at what you have put on there, it seems like just about anything you can imagine.
No, it's not anything you can imagine.
All right, well, I'm limited, so anything I could imagine. But, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that comes out of it.
There's a great deal of data.
You can extrapolate a lot out of something that seems relatively simple.
What if you have a Facebook page, and this is page with a capital P. These are pages for companies, causes, and so forth. They're not individual pages. If you have a Facebook page and you are the administrator of that account, once you have a certain number of people who have liked the page, you can see what they call insights data, which are demographics about the people who have liked your page. And this is very, very powerful and very useful. The reason you have to have a certain number of people before you can see this data is that if you could look at this data when you had one or two fans or friends of that page, that data would reveal information about those people. But once you have 30 people or so, you can't tell who the data is about. And they do screen out things that would be identifiable. But you can find the age and sex of the people who like the page. You can find where they are coming from. You can find how many people they communicate with. You can't see who it is. But you get all of these numbers, which are usable. And so that's, I think that's something that we sometimes lose track of. Partly it's because when we talk about numbers and statistics, some people tune out for some reason.
So, right. Well, yeah. Now, so I'm looking at our administration panel page for on Facebook for WAMC, and I just want to give people so people who don't have their own page like this, just so they know what we're talking about. So, for example, so here's a segment that we had on this morning, our panel discussion, and it says total reach, and it's 1,101.
Mm-hmm.
And that's people that looked at that, right?
Right.
Or have interacted with it in some way.
Yeah, there are several, and there are footnotes on all of these that provide definitions. What these do is Facebook distinguishes between the degree of interaction someone has with a page. Seeing it is one level of interaction. Liking it is another level. A higher level still is writing a comment about it. So you can track all of that and see what people are doing and look at the level of involvement. Again, not by individuals. Unless they are commenting, then you can see who commented. But so you can see if you are interested in driving attention, you can see what works best for you. Turning it around, looking at the grant aspect of it, is if you are writing a grant and you want to prove or demonstrate that a number of people are actually seeing what you're doing and are interacting with it, anything that you want, those numbers are there for you to use. So you can say, there's one grant application that I know is being worked on now. You can see something about the demographics. You can't see who they are, but you can see where they're from.
Mm.
So you can say this is or isn't a local initiative. You know, we have many people, and they are all from this area, which in many cases is a very positive thing. In other types of projects, being able to say we have people from around the world who are interested in this issue. You know, that's a positive thing. So it depends on the organization. But there are numbers here that you can use.
So how seriously should we take them in the sense of if I'm looking at this from a programming sense, and I look at this and I say, okay, well, we have this many people, say 2,000 people that looked at this about this particular discussion, and 4,000 people looked at this particular discussion. Well, I'm interested in why it was double. So that tells me that maybe, this is of more interest to our listeners than other. Although, and then there's the complete aberrations, which is there's a picture here from Bob Barrett's farewell party last night, and that got more than anything else. So, right, you know what I mean? So, you know, I mean, you can't put too much faith into it, I guess, can you?
Pictures are very effective.
Yes.
People like to look at pictures.
Sure.
So it's, you know.
Yeah, that makes sense. All
right. You know, if we posted a snapshot of us here, that would boost the roundtable ratings.
I should do that right
now. Despite the fact that.
we are what we are.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. But my point being, because there is a thing here that then says promotion where you can boost posts. So then Facebook gives you the option of how to increase that, of what you can do to make sure more people see it.
And that involves the payment of money.
Yes, of course it does. Yes.
So you could boost, you know, the interest in a program by paying or by making the program more interesting.
Yeah.
One is... They're two different approaches.
We try to go on the
You have to do both.
Yes, as we try to do each and every day here on the roundtable. But those numbers are fairly. I mean, I guess you could, like any numbers, you can go crazy looking at them. But they can be instructive in some way, shape, or form.
They certainly can be. And this goes back to the point that some people are really uncomfortable around numbers.
Yeah.
Because there are other people who say, "I've got a bunch of numbers here, reflecting the number of people who interacted with." Pages about or links for these various programs, and it's not really a scientific project. You say, okay, I've got these numbers. What can explain those numbers? And that's not a mechanical task. Some explanations might be, the most obvious one might be the content of the program.
Right.
In the case of WAMC, in things that I have seen that cause things to spike or not are when people post photos and videos, particularly to a site where the public can post those things. Videos drive numbers way, way up.
Yeah.
And if you do it, I do think if you do that in order just to drive the numbers up, I think people will catch on. Videos we did on the Saranac River Trail in Plattsburgh it was the opening event, because we couldn't have an opening because as soon as the trail was paved, you couldn't keep people off it. But at the opening, there's a wonderful photo that was taken of a fun run for 5-year-old kids.
Oh,
boy,
so
do people love that photo.
That's gold. Yeah, that's
yes.
Gold. And you can tag it and everything else, and that's fun, right, for the kids and for everyone. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, so we know that. But even having, I would say, based on someone with some enough background in statistics to be dangerous, I would say that the, and even worse, marketing research.
Oh, there you go.
I would say that the discussion about why those numbers might be as they are could be even more valuable than the numbers, because you're trying to say, what could explain this?
Well, I find that reassuring, which means that the data, as you said from the very beginning, is automated. That just comes to us, but you still need people to think.
You still need to think about it, and people have to get comfortable with this. If you're particularly in the nonprofit world, in the commercial world, we know that because we do have market research.
Right.
But in the nonprofit world, some people, not all by any means, but some people are a little leery about numbers. I'm not sure why. It's just a general. They're more interested in other things.
Well, I think two things. One, they're hard to often grasp and put into context, and two. Sometimes we don't trust them.
Well, that's true. And I think things like Facebook numbers, we have to trust because they are automated. It's really hard to fudge those numbers.
Right.
But what they mean is it's hard to figure out. It's like with ratings when being able to determine if people are watching a TV set that's turned on.
Yes. So let us go back to the beginning, because in the introduction and the scenario that you gave was about writing a grant application. So Facebook certainly is a great example, but it is but one piece of the pie.
Mm-hmm.
So in doing this, you can use that as an example. These are the numbers that we have on Facebook, but there are many other numbers, and it's not the only thing that you can point to.
And I think it can open an interesting conversation as you're trying to figure out how to present an organization by saying, look, how many people do we have? The absolute numbers don't really matter, I don't think, very much. I mean, yeah, you know, if you're Lady Gaga, whether Lady Gaga still has more people liking her than liking Barack Obama, I don't know if it's true. It probably is.
Yeah.
She's always been a leader.
Yeah, yeah.
But the absolute numbers...
It's the meat dress.
The absolute numbers, I think, don't matter so much. It's the relative numbers, particularly within an organization. Like you say, one program versus another. Does this help us understand? And it may not, but it's certainly worth discussing. And among other numbers, a number that I find really, really interesting is, and it's not really social media, but I sort of dump apps into the world of social media because it's convenient.
Yes.
And
so many, and I'm sorry to interrupt, but so many apps are connected to social media through Facebook when you log into them through Facebook or Twitter or whatever.
Yeah, so it's but there's something there if you look
mushy.
If you look at the statistics that developers get about their apps. As with Facebook, we don't have details on who is doing it. We don't see, we even have less demographic data than we have on Facebook. We don't see age or sex or something, but we do know where, which store people bought an app from. And there's, in the Apple world, there's a store basically for every country. So this, and we also have that location information on Facebook. So you can say if you have an app or a project or something and say people in, for many of our apps, people in the U.S. buy this app.
Hmm.
Where else, is this app interesting to people in South America and not in Europe? That would be something you might want to look at. Where are these people coming from? Because it is a global marketplace. And why is it popular in one place rather than another? Again, anything that I think gets a discussion going about why behaviors are happening with regard to purchases or Facebook or anything, that being able to start that discussion from somewhere other than just some notion about how are we doing, I think is interesting and useful.
Now, does Facebook have more demographic information than they're letting on, giving to us in the sense of because of the users, you know, my page, you know, they have the sex, they have the age, they have, you know, that on some of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they know a little bit more than they're giving, right?
Yeah. Well, they don't release any identifiable information.
Right.
So they will.
But a 45-year-old male, is that identifiable information or is that just, I mean, that's basic demographic information.
That would show
it?
Up with the number of people who like the page who are in the age range, I don't know what it is, 40 to 49 and male.
Yeah.
That each age range, it's broken out by gender.
Okay. So then you still have a way of figuring that
out. Yeah. But you can't get back to an individual.
It is. It's all fascinating. You can find out more about it by going to NorthCountryConsulting.com. NorthCountryConsulting.com. Jesse Filer provides consulting services to small businesses and nonprofits and is a very busy man these days. Jesse, thank you very much as always. I appreciate it.
Good to be here.
Thank you. We'll see you next month. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.